You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome back to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Mr. Electric Car. Oh, let's get an electric car, Spike. Driving electric.
Dude, my car has 375,000 gas-powered miles on it. I'll have to pry that gas pump from my cold, dead hands. No, we haven't gone electric yet.
Good for you. You're like a real American. Before we get into that, Spike, this story just broke. Did you hear this? That Seattle is the most expensive, or one of the most expensive cities in the United States to raise kids?
Yeah, I did know that.
It's pretty rough. So it's about two, well, of course, you got two of them, but it looks like people in the Seattle, Tacoma metro area, parents should be ready to spend around $25,000 on one child in a single year. It's pretty crazy, man.
Per year?
The second, number two, by the way, per year.
Wow,
per
my
year.
Kids are getting shortchanged. Bury that story. Would you, buddy, sit on that story for me? Thanks.
So the first one is San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley area, which is $35,000, and that makes sense. The second one is my hometown of Santa Cruz, California, but they call it Santa Cruz Watsonville, came in second, where it's $33,000 a year. But Santa Cruz Watsonville is kind of like saying Seattle, Kent. You know what I mean? Like the difference
between the two is pretty wide.
It's pretty stark. And so when they say like, oh yeah, it costs $33,000 a year, I go, not in Watsonville. What are you talking about? Watsonville, California. The last time anybody went to Watsonville, California is when James Dean was there. Do you know what I mean? It's like, basically in the middle of nowhere.
Nobody knows, he's been in Kent more recently.
it's like, yeah, they have the garlic festival. Wow. Watsonville. Oh. Hey, let's have artichokes. Wow. It's so great. Anyway, but yeah, so the cost of living in Seattle, Tacoma, can you believe that? $25,000 a year.
Yeah.
Like, how much you spend on your kids?
We just throw pizza down the stairs every 7 to 10 days. No, I mean, we're lucky in so much that our older daughter's already out and grown, living her independent life. Our younger child has already been through school. And a lot, you know, those costs are, you know, feed and, of course, housing, of course, healthcare is expensive here. Daycare is expensive here for your kids. It's tough, man. And inflation's taking everything up from school supplies to the clothes on their back to the lunch bag they carry with them. Everything.
Yeah, on top of gas, right? Saudi Arabia is now reducing how much oil sends to the global economy.
Yeah.
So Saudi is going to cut off 1 million barrels per day starting in July, the oil markets, I feel like it's kind of difficult to really explain in depth, Spike, because you have to analyze it from the global petrol dollar. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily analyze it by barrels in the United States or any other country. We analyze it by, you know, what oil, the going rate is globally around the United States. So when I look at this, Spike, what my basic thing is, okay, this is bizarre. Obviously, prices are going to go up. But is this not kind of part of the desire for Americans to move over to electric car chain, right? Isn't this the idea that everyone eventually is just going to be driving electric?
Eventually, I would hope we were the last. I've said we're the last generation to smoke cigarettes. I think my kids will be the last generation. My daughter and their kids will be the last generation to have a brand new fossil fuel burning car. They will always have grandma's 65 Mustang. And even to my dying day, I won't be allowed to touch it. I'm not even allowed to wash my wife's car, let alone drive it. We'll still have gas-powered cars. You know, you said 2035, Washington and California both going to ban the sale of internal combustion engines by 2035, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I think that that's the date,
But they're not taking them off the road. There'll always be a need for gas-powered cars. There'll always be a need for gas stations. There'll be a mix between the two, you know, between electric power and gas-powered, with eventually the last-powered cars will be like, you know, be Mad Max, trying to find a gas station, eventually.
So what's going on with this? Why are so many electric car chargers in the United States not working? Now, when we were talking to Bob Rivers the other day, he was saying that whenever he drives his Tesla, he has to go and he has to stop somewhere for 20 or 30 minutes in order to get it to charge back up. It's one of the flaw designs, I think, with electric cars is that you don't really get a lot of mileage out of the charge, right? It's 200 to 300 miles.
Exactly. And that's a massive improvement in the last 7 to 10 years. Used to be you couldn't use it for – you could barely get to the next charging station, and you'd literally have to hopscotch your way across the country or across the state. It's getting better. there's, you know, the Biden infrastructure bill has a huge allotment for expanding the national charging station grid. Estimates that right now there's about 4 million electric charging stations coast to coast. They say by 2030, there could be 10 times that many, 30 million electric charging stations coast to coast, whereas estimations for how many electric cars would be on the road by 2030 would be like 25 million cars with 30 million charging stations.
That the thing that always weirds me out about this, man, is that how much it's pushed by people and how much money these companies are making, basically being backed by the federal government and by state governments.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really bizarre. It's kind of anti-market. It's anti-capitalism when you have people insisting that you get, hey, you know that thing that works really well? Yeah, I love it. Great. We're going to make sure that you can never buy it again and force you to buy something that's more expensive and not as efficient.
And not as dependable. Well, yeah. It's...
And not as dependable and blows up from time to time. Wait a minute. I'm not so sure I want that thing. Too bad. We're the federal government. You get what you pay for. I find it to be really annoying that we have the internal combustion engine, mm-hmm. which is basically perfect from the standpoint of producing energy and getting something to go from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want me to take technology that is kind of cool and kind of works, but sometimes randomly blows up, that is mined using child labor and then refined in China and then sent back to us where we get to put it into cars. I just find the whole thing to be fairly weird and bizarre, and I'm not a fan of it. You can say that I'm a shill for the oil industry. I'm advocating for choice here.
Yeah.
I want people to be able to say that if in 2030 or 2035, Chris, can you fact check us on that, when exactly the date is for, because Newsom passed it, and then of course Inslee was like, I had that idea too. I want to do that too. So,
I believe that quote was, holy petroleum, Batman.
So I just don't think, I guess it's like, so back, I think about it like this, Spike. So back in the day when you have cars first emerging, you still had people who were using horses,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And horses are, you got to take care of them, you got to feed them. There's a lot of effort that goes into maintaining horses. Did the federal government or state governments come in and say, you are not allowed to use horses anymore, and by 1915, that you shan't be allowed to use a horse anymore, and we shall only be using automobiles because they're better for the environment? Did anybody say that? No, because it's weird, right?
Let the market take care of itself.
And 2035 is the date.
Yeah, 2035.
Oh, man, my brain is so good at retaining that information. If only I could maintain a marriage. So, Mr. O'Neill, the thing that's weird about this is, so, and then you have people on the opposite side of the argument. You have people like Tucker Carlson, who famously came out, and he said that he thinks that the federal government should come in and step in and say that none of these trucks, the shipping trucks,
uh-huh.
should be powered by AI. That they should always be manned and that they should always be gas powered, right? So you have people on either side of the spectrum who are both jockeying for, I guess,
for your soul.
For your soul.
Yeah,
right?
Basically for your soul. But everybody's right in this. It's funny. This is the kind of thing where there's got to be a hybrid solution to this. I mean, I think I said this in a pre-show meeting, that there's got to be a generation of pain when you make the leap from antiquated petroleum-based energy sources. Which we all kind of agree something needs to be done.
It's not antiquated though, man. It's awesome. It's incredible.
So is breathing. Okay. So are cool summer evenings.
If you look at the when people talk about emissions,
yeah.
What is the main thing that produces emissions? They talk about what produces more emissions than anything else in the United States?
Cows.
Cows.
Going back to our farm meat thing.
So where is this huge thing about? And then on top of that, Spike, if you really cared about global emissions, you would be going after Carnival Cruise. You would be going after American Airlines. You would be going after John Kerry, who personally is increasing the temperature of this planet by 5 degrees every single time he steps into one of his private planes.
Oh, I thought
right?
it was just his hair care products alone are punching holes in the ozone layer at record level.
I mean, you know, when Al Gore Thor runs his washing machine, he basically, you know, increases the temperature of the globe. He literally decreases sea level.
I thought their all their washing dryers were converted to Tipper's pedal power. He does her jazzer wash. It's called.
Is there a least likable politician than Tipper Gore? Can we just say that when she came out and she said, I played Purple Rain for my kids and I didn't know these lyrics were so bad? And it's like, okay, lady, you're lying.
Thanks.
You're lying.
The first Karen, I believe. Yeah, she's in the Smithsonian. The first Karen.
And then she bit somebody else and then they became a Karen and then they complained to somebody else and they became a Karen.
Night of the Complaining Dead. I think that's called.
Right. I
think we got to have this move toward a green economy and a green energy economy.
Oh, I hate you.
At least not in total, but you have to get started as putting another club in your bag. I love the golf analogy, right? It'll be one tool at our disposal. That way, as more people start driving and more cars get on the road, we can lessen the strain on petroleum needs, right? And we can start to supplement that. And eventually there'll become a time where we'll have a bulk of green cars and green energy, both for home use and travel use, which will be supplemented by the remaining gasoline, which will drive down the need for gasoline, drive down the price for gasoline, drive down the need to poke holes in everything that's got a caribou sitting on it.
I agree. I agree. The problem is that in order for – you have to encourage people to want to do that. And what my options are for an electric vehicle – are a company that's run by a man-child who makes a subpar product,
yes,
meaning Tesla.
Yes.
Or I can go to the hybrid version and I can get, which is, I think, a much more viable option.
Okay. So
partially electric, partially like what Prius was doing.
Yes, I love that because if you're in the middle of nowhere, you can still find a gas station and get to the next
right,
life. Yeah.
Right. But you have to make it cheaper and more effective and then people will want it. When I think of the iPod, right?
Right.
The iPod did not sell well at all when it first came out. Up until what happened?
Yeah, but
they made it cheaper.
Technology advanced. Right. And same thing with electric cars, right? Well, they'll get more efficient. I mean, like the big makers too, the Fords, the GMs, they're going to all electric eventually. I mean, you know, there's
right.
They're like the last muscle cars are coming off the line. They're having entire truck lines now that are going to be completely electric from GM, from Chevy, from Ford. But you'll still have your gas powered beasts out there. And Tucker, I hate to say this, Mark today, Tucker was right.
No, he's not.
We need a trucking industry that we can count on to not be subverted by a power outage or an AI pollution.
Spike. Okay, let's go back to what I was saying previously. When we stopped using barrels, right? Did anybody say we have to preserve food in barrels because the barrel makers will be out of jobs if we get rid of the what will we do if we switch from horses to cars?
What about the
young lads out there who shoe the horses? What will they do? They won't have jobs. Truck drivers will always be needed,
right?
You will also have. Trucks that are operated and run by AI. That's the only difference.
And that's what I misspoke. I was saying we will always have a need for the manual ability to get goods from A to B and keep our country moving forward, our economy moving forward.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Always be needed.
But should
the federal government step in and say, there shall be no AI-driven vehicles moving around because we need truck drivers to keep their jobs?
No. We can't find enough truck drivers as it is now.
Right, exactly. Those men and women are the hardest. I mean, literally the lifeblood of America is the truck driver, right? And yet you can't find enough of them. And then when you do have them, they're not paid enough and they're overworked, right?
Right, so, and they can't drive 17 straight hours anymore because you got to make sure they're safe.
Ooh. You got to make sure they're not doing math, whatever that means. Yeah. God forbid you do a little blow before you get behind the wheel of a car and all of a sudden you got the federal government coming down on you. What kind of world are we living in? Speaking of, by the way, Mr. O'Neill, this whole self-driving car thing. I got this article talking about how it may not be basically they're saying, do you remember that scene from the movie iRobot where Will Smith gets into his BMW or his Audi and he says home and then the car
takes him home.
Reading a book, talking on the phone. They're basically saying that likely will not ever happen because there will always be something that the AI cannot detect or cannot see. And so there will always be the need for somebody to have their hands on the wheel of a car and paying attention.
Wow.
And what they point out is that there are many instances now where the AI technology that we have is not able to see, for example, warning flares from police. It can't pick it up because the smoke is disrupting the sensors, the little lasers that run back and forth.
Yeah.
So they can't see it. So they just keep rolling forward into these areas. They bring up other instances of when these things aren't able to operate the way that they should. You have pretty catastrophic events. So everybody's all like, oh, eventually I'll be able to do my makeup and yell at Chris Martin on the phone on my way to Cairo Radio Studios. And they're saying, no, it's probably going to be you paying attention more than likely, unless something absolutely dramatic happens where basically these vehicles are programmed to such an extreme degree that they're able to take in massive amounts of information.
Well, I love the hybrids that are existing now where if you start to drift out of your lane, they'll tell you. But if you start to get too close to
it. I had one of those in Texas. It was the worst. It was the worst thing I've ever driven in my life. It was like, every single time. I was driving in Texas. I went to a wedding in Texas. We rented a car, and it had that feature in it.
Yeah.
And every time I got within just, you know, maybe 6 inches of the white line on the right side of the car, it would physically jar the car back
out of the way. Yeah,
it was so unpleasant. I go, let me be an adult. Let me driving a car is an experience. Enjoy. We're Americans. It's what we do. We sit behind. Got the hands on the wheel, 10 and 2, and I'm driving. I'm, wow, a miracle of modern technology.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what we treat it like? We treat it like we're visiting like somebody's house that they're moving out of. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh, don't worry about it. You could spill stuff on the carpet. Like, we treat driving like it's nothing.
Like we don't want our security deposit back. Yeah, I hear you.
Right. Like, yeah, I don't care about the deposit. I don't like the landlord. It's like, no, this is something that we should cherish and something that we should enjoy, not something that we should give to a robot. I'm not in favor of it.
Well, again, you are a superior being. A lot of people never will learn how to parallel park. They need a car to help them. A lot of people will not pay attention to the car in front of them, needs their smart car to slow it down when you're coming up on a car that's doing 40 and you're doing 70. You know, some people really need the training wheels.
Hey, speaking of, by the way, Mr. O'Neill, when we get back, gambling is a thing that people do. A lot of it. And we are going to talk about it when we get back right after this. For a Google Doodle, Spike.
Nice,
I got some Google Doodles. I got some good ideas.
What have you ever drawn, Jack, that won you thousands of dollars?
Tons of stuff all the time. Thanks, Kate Stone. Appreciate it. Hey, did you know there's free cheese down in the break room?
Yeah. Free cheese. Yep. Off I go.
Ask for the curly special. I drew an inside flush that got me $5,000 once.
Are you talking about the gambling story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
That.
So there's a story, basically why people are losing more in Las Vegas. And basically what I can gather from this is that as casinos and as these hotels draw in more higher end clientele, there's basically less space for people who are not as wealthy and thus don't. And so the games have changed, basically.
Yeah, yes.
And so the kinds of games that people play have changed. And so thus the stakes have gone up. And there we have covered the story about gambling. But, Spike, what's more interesting to me, you got a good gambling story that we're going to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, you folks who still like the penny slots, it's called Reno. It's waiting for you. Seriously, Vegas doesn't want the low-end gambler. They want the low-end gambler to go to Reno.
This is basically the crux of the story, that if you're a lower-end gambler, you do not belong in Vegas, although they make a tremendous amount of money.
They do.
They say that it is more likely to be – or the games that you once liked are now more likely to be found in Reno or in Atlantic City than they are to be in Vegas because they got those high rollers.
The minimum of tables have gone up.
Right.
The odds have changed in roulette. I mean, Vegas. Right. Vegas wants the higher-end gambler.
So what's your good gambling story here?
Okay, so, you know, we were talking in the pre-show about this Vegas story. And, you know, and we've got a very healthy casino and gambling community here in the Northwest. We've got wonderful casinos. And by the way, they bring all of your classic rock bands, your antiquated stars. I swear casinos are the retirement plan for all of live music.
Yeah, like Brett Michaels is playing at the Mukilteo Casino.
They can afford to pay these artists where, you know, a little concert venue, like when Parker's was still alive back in the day on Aurora Avenue, where all these little venues can't afford to pay artists enough to keep them coming to town. But casinos can. Casinos want an audience to come in, enjoy live music for a couple hours, and then go hit the casino floor, the gaming floor. I stopped gambling in 1985 because I don't do this often, but I asked God to help me in a moment of gambling crisis.
And so what happened?
And the Lord came through. Okay, so imagine that you're at the time I'm 22 years old. I'm living on my own. I'm a bartender by trade, and the bar I work at is run by a bookie. Okay, this was a little neighborhood bar in Baltimore. My parents had already sold our family bar, and they had already relocated to Florida. They're snowbirds by this point. And I went to work for another guy in my neighborhood who had a little community neighborhood bar. And this guy was a bookmaker. And, you know, we would literally on Sundays be a very busy day because people would be coming in to collect their winnings or pay their balance right through the bar. There were nights I had $10,000 in cash in this little neighborhood bar. It's like Budweiser. Oh, a bad weekend for you. Budweiser's $501. He gives me $500. I give him a Budweiser. That's how we settled the books, right? So I'm 22 years old. I'm having a bad weekend. I lost two games on the college games on Saturday. I lost the early game on Sunday. I'm down $500, right? So this was Monday night. I get to Monday night and I'm down $500 for the weekend. And at 22, I ain't got $500. So I bet the over.
Yeah.
I bet the over in a Dallas Cowboy Miami Dolphin Monday Night Football game. This is when Danny White was the Cowboys quarterback. Dan Marino was the Dolphins quarterback. And the over is like 44. This is an easy bet. Dan Marino is lighting the world on fire, right? I mean, he is going bananas. This year he took the Dolphins to the Super Bowl. I bet the over, you know how the over works, right? If both teams combined have to score over 44 points for it to be a win, you bet the over.
I'm picking up what you're putting.
Yeah.
That's all right, though.
Okay,
yeah,
it's 7-0 at halftime. 7-0. It's raining. I'm like, I am taking gas because I'm about to be $1,000 down. I was chasing a $500 loss trying to get even by betting $500 on the over. And I'm like, I didn't have 500. I definitely don't have 1,000.
Yeah.
And this is my boss, the bookie, right? I'm going to be working free for a month just trying to pay this off to this guy. And luckily, he was a friend, so I wouldn't be hobbling for the rest of my days.
Yeah, he wouldn't be breaking your kneecaps.
Right. So it's 7-0 at the end of at halftime. At the end of the third quarter, it's 7-7. I'm like, I'm home. We left the bar. I'm sitting in front of the TV. I'm depressed. How am I going to explain to my parents that I got no money? I need help for rent. How am I going to tell my girlfriend she's getting no Christmas present week before Christmas, right? All of a sudden, they start scoring points left, right, and center in the fourth quarter. It's 14-7. It's 14-all. It's 21-14. And with a minute and a half to go, it's 21-14. And I'm like, wait a minute. I might get out of this alive. And all of a sudden, the Dolphins throw a touchdown pass, right? To Dan Marino, to Mark Duper. And this will be 42 points. This will be 21-all with a minute and a half to go, right? I'm home. I'm free. I'm going to win this. Well, he goes out of bounds. And the referees are meeting at the center of the field. Was he pushed out of bounds? Was it a legal catch? Is it a touchdown? Does Spike cover his bet? And I'm sitting on my knees in front of my TV. And I said out loud, Lord, if you give me this, I will never make another bet as long as I live. And as the words left my lips, the referee's arms went up in the air. The touchdown counted. It was 21-all. The next field goal to break the tie puts me at 45. I win the bet and I escape. And I've never, I swear, that was 1984. I haven't made a bet since. I asked the Lord for help. He directly intervened, and I'm done gambling.
Yeah, you got a friend in Jesus.
I do.
You spent the remainder of your life laughing in that man's face, even though he died for your sins, Mr. O'Neill. How dare you?
You laugh with your friends. Your friends will tell you the truth.
That's a good gambling story, man. My gambling story doesn't even compare to that. So the sense of relief that washed over you, can you John Steinbeck it for me? What was the sensation like?
Every aspect of my life was about to be thrown into a gutter. No rent, no money, no Christmas presents, nothing but a sad story of clearly what is a gambling problem to my parents, my girlfriend at the time, and my boss.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, and I can't believe that I got out of this alive. I had no right to win that bet or cover that debt and walk away from that with, that was the easiest life lesson I have ever been given. And all it took was a prayer.
Isn't that interesting that, that sometimes we need that dramatic interference into our life to remind us that we're doing something horribly wrong?
Yeah, that's there's the bottom, you know, that bottom.
I'll give you a quick example, Spike. At one point in time, I used to be a really bad driver. I would drive really, really fast, and I had this little Mitsubishi Mirage.
It's a little
hatchback. The thing was like from '86 or something like that.
Yeah.
But that thing, because it weighed 100 pounds, you could go 0 to 60 in that thing. That thing was fast, man, because it was so unbelievably light. So I'm at this intersection, and my buddy Nate pulls up next to me. I'm in high school. I'm 17 years old, and he's in his big, Ford Ranger. It's got V8 in it. It's loud. He's revving his engine. I'm revving my engine, and we're going to go for it. Toes on the line. We're going to be going right down. So anyway, I'm getting ready to go. He's getting ready to go. For whatever reason, I look in the rearview mirror, and in the far distance, I see the cop lights. Not on. But just barely over, barely over, probably 10 cars back. And I go, not today.
Oh.
Nate takes off.
Ooh.
Immediately. Those lights hit him, right?
Lit him up. Yep.
And I go, man, you know what? I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to be doing this street racing nonsense anymore. All right. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with everybody's feedback and everybody's constructive criticism when we get back right after this. Text messages. Mr. O'Neill, I got to say this, that whenever somebody tells me that the humor that we have on this show helps them, or whenever the fact that we try to be more positive than negative on the show, that they like it, it reminds me of the endeavor that I...
Jack, you cut off for a second there. It reminds you of your endeavor to...
And what we talk about, right?
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit, buddy. I think your cats are having a day with you. Keep going.
Hey, better now or no?
No, you're kind of phasing. Can we reboot Jack real quick, and I'll read some of the early texts while we get him back up to speed? Because I hear what you're saying, Jack Stein. You're saying that we want people to enjoy themselves when hearing differing points of view. You want people to laugh more than argue these days. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. Jack, when you get back, just speak up, and we'll let you jump back on. The show is helping someone who is, I think, Jack, this is what you're referring to. The show is helping someone who is grieving. 206 says, Jack, I'm mourning the loss of my best friend, a 15-year-old Chihuahua. Your sense of humor and laugh have truly brightened my day. That is the nicest compliment you can get. Trust me. Because I tell you what, I'm a pet guy. Jack's a cat guy.
Mm-hmm.
I read the text, Jack, the 206 text about the guy losing his Chihuahua.
Yeah, unconditional
love of a pet, man. Ain't no substitute for it. And it's a real loss when people lose their pets. And if we can help you by making you laugh a little bit, thank you for sharing it with us.
Yeah, that's kind of the goal, right? That's what I was saying before, is that, like, you could do outrage radio all day long and make a ton of money doing it. I just prefer to tell jokes and try to explain the news in such a way so that it's more, I guess, human than abstract. And, when I lost my Pomeranian, Spike, my little Pomeranian bear, I took care of that dog every day for like 5 years. He was Sarah's dad's dog.
Yeah.
And when Sarah's dad died, Sarah was still working, full time, and I was working from home as I do now. So I could just spend all day with him.
Nice.
And so I wasn't really a dog guy, but I quickly became a dog guy. Mm-hmm. And when he passed away, I was devastated for a couple months. And then I realized, but I was able to give him such a positive senior lifestyle
that the
grieving process really kind of ended for me when I thought I did that dog was living real well for the last 5 years of his life.
Right on, man.
So we were talking about Plan B in vending machines. And 206 texted in, and what I find really interesting about this is that the substance of the argument that I was making about Plan B in a vending machine is that it is a substance which is, you should probably speak to a pharmacist or a physician before you take it, because it can not work. It can have conflicting effects based on other medications you might be taking.
Right.
And so because it's also not advised to take it on a regular basis, because it is such, just hormonally, it's very dramatic on the body. And so the substance of the argument that I was making was, I think it should be available to everybody. I think that you should probably go talk to a pharmacist before you take a substance which is designed to induce the shedding of the uterine lining. 206 says, college-age women can own a gun and vote. They are adults in the eyes of most laws. They can surely make decisions about their own health. I agree. Goes on to say, availability and cost are pretty critical when you're on a college campus. Get a life and let women manage themselves. Does that, who cares more about the health of women, Spike, me or 206? Just based on the evidence that 206 has given us versus what I have said, right?
I don't really know enough about 206. I can say that 206's text has a uterine air about it.
I can't say,
you know,
that.
And maybe 206 that. Feels that. I don't mean any disrespect or if I'm misunderstanding.
I'm just saying, like, so one of us, between me and 206, one of us is actually concerned about the health and well-being of women, and the
right.
other one is telling me to ignore the fact that a woman can take a drug that could potentially cause her to have detrimental health effects if she's taking an anticonvulsant. And my thing was like, hey, maybe you should talk to a pharmacist
right.
before.
That's all we said. Get a little guidance from a professional. Not ask your dad if it's okay. We didn't say that.
All right. And then John texted in about electric cars, not Mr. Curly, but a different individual named John. And it says, we're talking about electric cars and the pros and cons of such. And John says something that's very based. It says, the biggest problem with electric cars is that there's not enough nickel-cadium on the planet to just replace the cars in the United States, let alone all the cars in the world. This is very true. Goes on to say, plus, hey, you guys think that you're saving the world by using an electric car? Watch the mining process. Destroying the planet, destroyed environments, etc. Spike, have you seen the images of the Chinese mining companies in the DRC or anywhere in this sub-Saharan
Africa?
Yeah,
and I have to zoom in because I want to see the little kids. That's what I love, is the
so
little
bad.
Kids. I want to really zoom in. No.
Right.
Well, here's the problem with that, and he's right. John is correct that the mining is a horrific necessity of electric cars. But that's assuming we're never going to get more battery technology evolution. I think we're going to get smarter about how we power these cars. We're not going to have to destroy huge sections of the planet or have this landfill of TV-sized batteries that we don't know what to do with. I think there's going to be a natural evolutionary progress where cars become more efficient and batteries more efficient, smaller, and easier to make and dispose of.
Coming up next, I will be chastising Jacob Rummel via text for not sending me the show sheet for the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker radio program. And, Spike, tomorrow, I do believe we shall be talking about the Washington AG Bob Ferguson settling that neglect case for
$3.1 million.
More money. All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Thanks so much. Bye.